Welcome back. 4:46, 7:30 a.m., 102.9 FM, WTNT. It's Andy Parks live from the Washington Times. Joining me now, Washington Times political editor Stephen Dinan. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Andy.
Do text messages from federal officials belong in Freedom of Information Act records? That's the question, and you sort of have, well, I guess, sort of an answer through your story that I read in the Washington Times this morning. The man who exposed former EPA chief Lisa Jackson's email to the world is now after someone else, but it's in the form of text messages this time around?
Yeah, the guy's name is Chris Horner, and he's probably familiar to many of your listeners as a guy who's done a lot of work trying to poke EPA on its climate investigations, but he also last year is the guy who revealed that the former chief, Lisa Jackson, had this secondary email address under the name of Richard Windsor, and that she was using that for most of her internal EPA business. And the key question is whether she was using that to avoid open records requests for her documents and what she was writing. EPA, turns out, has a pretty bad history of not handling open records requests very well, or just not handling electronic records very well. The a regional administrator earlier this year resigned after he actually signed an affidavit saying that he didn't use his personal email to conduct agency business, and it turned out that in fact the members of Congress in an investigation found that he was in fact using his personal email to conduct agency business, basically having communications with some of these outside environmental groups. And so he has since resigned, and the acting head of EPA earlier this month had to put out a memo to everybody saying, hey, we're all going to have to be retrained on what the law requires of us when we're dealing with electronic records, because we're just not doing a good enough job. So there are a lot of problems backed up there, and Horner's been the guy at the nexus of a lot of them.
All right, but is he looking for a specific text message?
So the reason he's going after text messages is because he got a tip that Gina McCarthy, and there's a lot of names in this, but Gina McCarthy is the person that Obama has nominated to be the next EPA chief, the next full EPA chief, and the researcher Chris Horner got a tip that when she has appeared to testify before Congress on about 20 different occasions over the last 4 years, she's been seen furiously texting on her phone, sometimes as she's there testifying, essentially, while somebody's asking a question. And he wants to know what she has been texting back and forth. He's actually been told that she was essentially using some salty language to talk about the proceedings, and he wants to get a look at those. So the key question here is, are those text messages, are they public records? Are they subject to Freedom of Information Act requests? If they were emails, they absolutely would be subject to those requests. But text messages are, they're still written on essentially the same way that emails on a BlackBerry would be written. They're on the keypad. But it's a very real question whether, first of all, that any agencies are even storing them the way they're supposed to be, and second of all, whether they're searching them when people ask for records.
Mm-hmm. That was my next question. I'm wondering if they even exist. Maybe they've been purged. And what responsibility does the phone company, the provider, have to hold on to them?
Now, and those are all the good questions. Now, the law makes it not necessarily the responsibility of the provider. It's the responsibility of the government employee. If you are doing business and create what's known as a record, and that has there's a long bit of case law on what actually constitutes a record that needs to be saved. But if you are a federal employee and you are doing government business, you are likely creating records, and it's your obligation to save those, whether that means forwarding the text to your email or printing them out. You are required to be the one to go ahead and store them and turn them over to the National Archives. Essentially, at the end of your tenure, they stay with the agency up until a particular point when they all go over to the archives and all of these are supposed to be available to the public with certain exceptions and exemptions for personal things and national security and whatnot. But all of these are supposed to be available for the press and the public to ask for these documents. And so that's the key thing here is have any of the agencies actually been storing text messages? And if they have been storing them, when I'm a reporter and I send in a request saying I want all electronic documents that this person has sent dealing with Keystone Pipeline, for example, are texts included when I ask for those documents? And as of right now, there's no indication, certainly, that EPA is turning over text messages. There's no indication that EPA is even storing them the way they're supposed to. In fact, I did a brief survey of about a half dozen departments yesterday and didn't get a reply back from any of them saying, yes, we are storing text messages and here's our policy. So it looks like the federal government, this has caught them all by surprise, and they don't have a clue how to handle this, which basically means there's another loophole in open records laws sitting there for people to exploit.
Did you get any comments from anyone at the EPA, or for that matter, the White House?
Nope. EPA and the White House Budget Office didn't reply to repeated messages sent last week and then again yesterday on Monday. And, you know, as I said, the federal half a dozen federal agencies I reached out to, or departments I reached out to, also just basically ignored the question, which, you know, it tells me that they don't have a policy. My first basic question was, hey, is there a government-wide policy, or each of these departments, do you all have a policy for handling, storing emails and text messages, and do you regularly check that? Not a single one of them bothered to answer that. As I said, that tells me that they don't have that policy. The one federal agency that did reply was the Archives, National Archives, who are charged to store all this stuff in perpetuity, and they said that texts are like other emails if they meet the definition of a non-transient record, and there's a very particular bureaucratic definition for that. But if they are doing official business that creates official records through texts, then they are supposed to be storing them, and the archive said that they actually do make efforts to check all records they have if they have been stored. So the key question is, are agencies doing what they're supposed to be doing? And one other thing to add to this is that there are a couple of champions of Freedom of Information Act requests here on Capitol Hill, and even those offices said yesterday that they just haven't done much work with this. You know, it really is sort of the cutting edge of technology and where it might be a loophole in this law.
Yeah, Gina McCarthy's probably saying, where's Sandy Berger when I need him?
Yeah, the one thing we should add about McCarthy is that she actually was asked not about text messages, but instant messages, computer instant messages, IMs, where the other potential area where technology was getting ahead of open records. When she appeared before the Senate for her confirmation hearing, she was specifically asked, do you use the IM system to get around open records? And she said, look, I'm a dinosaur. I don't know how to use IM at all. So that took care of that question. But since she's been seen texting, that raises a different issue that nobody's asked her yet. So as you said, we'll see what her defense is.
Yeah. All right. I want to take you on to something else. The president holding a news conference today. He says he'll be the final arbiter on immigration. You surprised?
The key thing about Obama is what role he's going to end up playing in these discussions. And so what he portrayed himself as in the press conference today is the last line of defense. Basically, he's not going to get involved in the very specifics of what's in the bill. He's laid out very broad goals, and if the bill meets those goals, even if it's written differently than he would, then he'll sign it. And that's actually very different than he has been involved in some of these other major issues. Where he's been heavily involved in writing details. This is much more the George W. Bush approach, where Bush would lay out grand principles and then say, it's up to Congress to write their bill. As long as you meet my principles, I'll sign the bill. In the very particular, this matters because Obama had initially been opposed to triggers and had initially been opposed to a long pathway to citizenship. The Senate bill envisions a 13-year pathway for most illegal immigrants, and it does have triggers. So the triggers are in my opinion, they're relatively weak triggers, but both of those are things that Obama initially had said that he didn't want, and he's basically backed off and said, okay, Congress, you go ahead and write it. As long as it essentially gets where I want to go, I'll be good with it. That's maybe a practical decision as much as anything else. The more involved he gets in the actual Senate negotiations, I think the tougher it'll be to win over any Republican support. So I think he's probably realized that his involvement can oftentimes be poisonous up here rather than helpful.
Yeah, you know, and this is going to be a long road because every day it seems we get something new. I know that this morning I was reading the story of Jeff Sessions saying that illegals will immediately be eligible for, you know, welfare benefits, government programs, and just the other day we were told that would not be the case at all.
Yeah. Now, the welfare benefit, I think what's going on there is that it's that their citizen children would immediately be eligible for those, which basically means, you know, so if you're getting food aid for your children, that, of course, goes to the parents. It doesn't go directly to the children. But those children are already eligible for that. It's questionable how many new benefits folks would actually be eligible for once they have this tentative legal status. The bill does say that they are not supposed to be eligible. You know, you and I have talked about this in the past. The key question is, are we actually even bothering to check those programs to see whether people are eligible through legal status, or are we just giving them out? So it's not even necessarily that they get new eligibility. The question is, do they, just by being here legally, do they feel more inclined to sign up and basically hope that people aren't checking to see which category they fall into?
Mm-hmm. All right. Very good. Thank you for the update on all the stories. And we'll talk again this week, I'm sure.
My pleasure, Andy.
See you. Stephen Dinan, Washington Times political editor. 457, 7:30 a.m., 102.9 FM, WTNT.